What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. It's your boy Marty Bent here for another edition of Rabbit Hole Recap. We've got Matt back in the studio, back on solid ground here in the United States. Not that you were not on solid ground in Hong Kong, but it's nice to have you back stateside. How was your trip?
I was in rendition. That's always a plus.
What?
I don't know. When you go to China, you know, I feel like you're a known Bitcoiner.
Really?
It's probably like the one last good opportunity to go to China before the next bull run.
Yeah. What'd you think?
It was pretty badass. We were in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Hong Kong's a really badass city.
How was...
It's like New York City in Asia.
Yeah.
It's
how was the documentary?
It was like no zoning laws, so they just go really high. It went really well. It was fun. I've just been wrecked, but I never thought jet lag was a thing, but the 16-hour flight plus 13 hours time difference just completely destroyed me.
Dude, I was wrecked when I went to Paris. I can't imagine going all the way to Hong Kong.
Yeah, Europe's a piece of cake compared to this.
I'm glad you're back. Glad you had fun. We've got a lot of topics to talk about this week. Before we do that, though, Honeyminer's back as a sponsor. We got them back. And they got a big announcement. Our friends at Honeyminer, new product announcement, Honeyminer Max for Linux. So all you freaks out there have had Linux hardware, have been wanting to participate with Honeyminer, you can finally do this. They've finally launched Linux products. So Honeyminer Max, you go to honeyminer.com/labs to get started. It's compatible with Ubuntu 16.04, Ubuntu 18.04, or CentOS 7. Zero fees, no account required, Bitcoin payouts every 2 hours. That's every 2 hours, and profitability around 10% above market value. No fees, no account required, Bitcoin every 2 hours, and 10% above market rate, or market value, excuse me. Seems like a good deal to me.
You auto mine the most profitable shitcoin at any given time, and then they automatically dump it for Bitcoin and pay you. So,
doing a great service.
And you use your GPUs to help Bitcoin out.
Yeah, and they're holding strong with the KYC. Good clean way to get Bitcoins.
Yeah, there's no KYC.
No KYC.
And this is actually a step above their other product because it's more of a beta product for advanced users.
Mm-hmm.
It's all command line. There's no GUI, but...
Yeah, you were playing around with it, weren't you?
0% fees. No fees.
That's crazy.
For now, I'm assuming they're just trying to like bootstrap it, but it's like a really easy way to, you know, you connect a bunch of GPUs and you connect it to a little Linux box, run this, and they're just automatically dumping Bitcoin into your account. You don't have to worry about which coin you're mining at any given time. They just handle all that for you.
Yeah. So definitely go to honeyminer.com/labs. Check it out. Doing really cool stuff. Any of you freaks with Linux machines out there, give it a try. Shout out Honeyminer. We spoke last Friday. Meeting on Fridays now? Are we switching our schedule up?
I kind of like this Friday happy hour with Matt and Marty.
I like it, too. I like it. My wife works from home every once in a while.
We could play it by ear.
Yeah, we'll play it by ear.
Keep changing it up. Keep them guessing.
Yeah. It's been a long week since we last spoke. I can't believe it's only been a week. It feels like it was a month ago at this point.
Feels even longer for me. It's nice to see your pretty face again, though.
Yeah. Right?
That remote shtick is...
It's tough. The rapport isn't there. You need...
And we also had like bad Wi-Fi between two hotels.
Yeah, I think...
different continents.
Might have been spied on while we were having that conversation. But I think we got over it.
I kind of hope so. Like, it'd be nice if they recognized our greatness and...
That'd be cool.
Spying on us.
Yeah. Well, I lost you towards the end of that episode. Had to cut it short. Apparently you were screaming. Asking me if I could hear you. I couldn't. Sorry for cutting us short. If you had anything else to talk about.
It's going to be a little piece of RHR historical gold right there. Okay, so you want to intro us with the price? What's today's date? Today's date's January 25th. Price is like 3,500 something.
Yeah, it's been pretty range bound for the last week or two. It's at 3,614 right now. Yeah, it's been pretty range bound since January 9th. It's been in this tight range. Right now the XBX trade block index is quoting at $3,549.78. Been pretty boring.
Yeah, we could save we'll save the price talk next week. We're gonna have Murad in so he can
Murad's coming back.
He can draw your lines in your ears.
We're gonna eat some steak. I'm very excited for next
very,
week.
Very delicious steak.
Yeah. But beyond price, a lot of geopolitical stuff going on this week. Let's start in Venezuela. Venezuela, we always have a keen eye on what's going on there, and it seems as though there is a coup this week, if you will. Some people are calling it a coup. Who knows what happens?
It's like a half coup.
Yeah. Trump declared the, what would you call it? opposition president, whatever it is. In
I think this is like a perfect situation where it probably did more, that probably does more harm than good. Like the most sketchy part about this other dude that I don't really know anything about is that all these, you know, Trump and all the, like Bolsonaro endorsed him too. All these endorsements kind of make it more sketchy. Yeah. But yeah, there's an opposition leader, it seems, that is trying to use the Venezuelan constitution to depose Maduro. And the big thing that Maduro has going for him, he's got the army on his side, and he's not going to go down without a fight, it doesn't look like.
Yeah. I'm trying to find this guy's name. I didn't prepare well for this. I'm sorry.
It's
freaks.
With a G. It's Guaido or yeah, something like that.
Guaido. So Guaido is the opposite. Apparently, he's a Bitcoiner. He's been talking about Bitcoin.
Well, you talked about it in 2014. He had one tweet about it.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it does get into this weird sort of idea of I feel a little dirty of Trump just like claiming this guy's president in the tweet.
And it was, like, very organized. Within, like, 15 minutes, there was, like, 20 different countries all said it, right?
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah, you know, as much as you hate Maduro, it's like...
But...
Is this the best way to do it?
They were absolutely in communication, you know? It was... They knew that Maduro wasn't going to just step aside. They wanted... You know, they needed to go through this like formal process of recognizing a different government, just lock up his assets and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I was, and I'm very confused as like an outsider looking in. I've seen many videos, on Twitter over the last couple of days, both in favor of Maduro and in favor of Guaido. From what I hear, a lot of people are like apprehensively optimistic, but, I really don't know. I don't have any intel on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, I feel wrong, like, making any kind of statements. But, you know, I think objectively, Maduro is a very shitty leader, so.
Obviously.
Or I guess is, I think it's objective, but let's just call it subjective, but whatever. Yeah. Look at the currency. The currency is just a fucking mess. The economy is a mess. But the one bright spot is that local Bitcoin's volume is sitting near all-time highs, measured in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I'm pulling that up now. No, I was checking other local Bitcoins, or excuse me, Coin.dance fixing up their site, so we don't have access to the chart at the moment. But
well, a while ago, Lawmaster did the U.S. version. I think it's sitting around all-time highs when measured in U.S. dollars as well. You know, it's a perfect example of Bitcoin giving people an escape route, whether that's corrupt government officials or regular people. It's a mix of both, most definitely. It gives you a way out of your national currency if your government is just completely inept and can't handle it.
Yeah. And again, this isn't a panacea for Venezuelans, Bitcoin in particular. It is a tool that can be leveraged by good and bad people, as Matt pointed out.
The particularly interesting thing here is that Venezuela already has a major, major state mining operation, like probably top five in the world.
And this is actually, thank God you brought that up, because this is something we should definitely bring up while we have Venezuela on top of our minds. They cannot get their gold back from the Bank of England. Like, the Bank of England is old. They can't repatriate their gold back.
It's not
like
your keys, not your gold.
Not your keys, not your gold. It's $1.5 billion worth of gold, I believe, that Venezuela, Maduro in particular, was trying to repatriate back to Venezuela. And Bank of England is just like, nope, we're not going to give you your gold. Which is like, hey, yeah, like he's a pretty terrible dictator. But it does get into that question. It's like, not your vault, not your gold.
Yeah, I mean, gold has a major custody issue, right? Like, it's really hard to transport. It's really hard to store securely.
Yeah, it really shows gold's Achilles heel when compared to Bitcoin.
Exactly. And so even if you're, like, if you're in Venezuela right now, you're a corrupt government in Venezuela, and you have a large amount of gold reserves being held, you know, foreign gold reserves, and you have Bitcoin reserves, even if those Bitcoin reserves fall a half, fall 70% because of volatility in the short term, at least you still have access to it, right? Like, you have something. It's way better than nothing. There's a major advantage. And you could transfer it all around the world. You can pay for things. And
yeah, exactly. This is probably a glaring example of why the gold standard failed eventually. It's because governments confiscated all the gold and centralized it in their vaults, and very few people around the world dictate who gets it and when. So that was interesting. So Venezuela, again, any of you Venezuelan freaks, if you want to reach out, give us some information on the ground, if you're even listening to this, I'm sure.
I think we have a lot of Venezuelan listeners. Yeah. We definitely have a lot of Venezuelan Twitterers.
Yeah, we got
to
get
Twitter's a great way to get some kind of glimpse into that world, and I try and boost them whenever possible.
Yeah, and Alejandro Machado was tweeting out about like Bitcoin Venezuela fund that you can donate.
Well, BTC Ven.
Yes,
we
BTC
boosted
Ven
on the pod in the past. I actually linked a project in the agenda that they're running right now, a meshnet project.
Really?
That it's a more open setup than Gotenna.
Okay.
It's tiny. It runs, it looks like it's almost the size of like two SD cards.
Really?
And it's just very low cost, low power consumption, easy for them to mass produce, and it allow them to send messages and Bitcoin transactions without any kind of formal internet or cell service.
That's pretty dope.
So that's BTC Ven on Twitter at BTC Ven.
Yeah, we'll link it in the show notes. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I think they're in the testing stages right now.
Well, yeah, you have the ability to donate to this cause. So if you have a few shekels to spare, it's a good
cause. Accept Lightning.
They do accept.
Which is pretty cool.
Lightning.
They were like way ahead of the game in accepting Lightning.
So to more cheery news. A lot of good demos this week. I wrote about it in the Ben on Monday. Lightning game demos are starting to really pique my interest, Matt. There was one in particular of a shooting game. I forget who exactly demoed it. I wrote about it. I should know his name. But, excuse me, you use Lightning Network microtransaction paywalls to like, get access to a wall in the game. And users, and since he released that demo, he's released more and more, he's been iterating on it, like, and making it so like users on Twitch can interact and pay for like monsters to come attack him and stuff like in the game, and just like really getting creative with the use cases that could be enabled with Lightning Network and gaming in particular.
Ever since I discovered Bitcoin, I wanted to be able to play a first person shooter type game, like a Counter-Strike, or maybe like even like a Fortnite, which isn't formally first-person shooter, but you get the idea, where every kill you make, the person you kill pays you a little bit of money with no KYC or anything. So some like kid in like Singapore that's just like fucking dirty can bring home like enough to feed his family just from like killing noobs in America online. Like, it's like the future of gambling to me and the future of gaming, and it's just fucking badass. Like, that's way cooler to me than like buying skins or something.
Right.
And I think like we're closer to that than ever because of Lightning. And particularly with games right now, it's more easy to publish than it's ever been before, to be like an right. upstart.
No, and that's like the interesting sort of thought experiment I found myself going down, like thinking about how this is going to grow. And in the Bent, I was maybe like somebody like Sony would implement this to make their payments easier, but they probably act as a payment processor or make a lot of money from that. So it's probably going to be more of an indie game.
Yeah, all these big companies can't, because there's too much legal exposure for them, and they have no reason to. They're already making money. Like, for instance, like Fortnite. I don't know if you know how Fortnite works. Like, it's survival. 100 people drop on like an island. Last man left wins, right?
Played Fortnite before.
So it's super easy for them to do a mode where everyone deposits $5 on from their credit card or whatever, right? And then the winner gets $500 or $495, mm-hmm. right? You don't have to do any kind of microtransactions or anything. It's literally just a pot that you win. I think that would be wildly popular. They could take like 10% off the top, 15% off the top. They've absolutely thought about this. Their issue is they got to like KYC each individual person, make sure they're like legal age. Is gambling legal in their country? Does this classify as gambling or is it a skill-based game? All these different stuff. They're like, nah, well, we're better off just selling you like this $10 costume, right?
This dance move.
Yeah, so the hurdle here isn't... So you could do it with the traditional system. If you're going to follow regs, you could do it with this traditional system as it is. And so that's a real hurdle. So you need like some like anonymous indie type person who like drops an APK online, or you know, drops an EXE, drops some kind of game file online, whether that's for computer or mobile, that enables this without KYC that anyone can play.
Yeah, and somebody actually brought that up like in the thread after the Ben I wrote. They're like, I love the thought experiment, but this is really only going to enable be best like applied to illegal type situations or situations that are banned in your typical Western first world country. But even with that being said, though, like thinking about Bitcoin adoption long term, and this is a great Trojan horse for adoption, especially if you get gamers, if the indie game community is able to like implement Lightning and sort of prove out the use case for this. Maybe gamers start demanding like that they are able to compete for Satoshis because they recognize the upwards potential of Bitcoin's future valuation, and they don't want to like put money on a platform with a credit card and just use that. They'd rather win Satoshis and maybe HODL.
I mean, once we get to that level where people prefer Bitcoin, you know, we've made it. That's so, of course, right?
But yes, but I'm thinking like adoption, like who's going to be playing these games? Younger generations, like they probably will innately get Bitcoin more than anybody. So maybe
but
gaming.
Do you think they would rather like Bitcoin than V-Bucks?
I don't know. I'm not as involved in that culture as I should be to make an educated response to that question.
I play way too many video games.
I haven't gamed,
and
hard in a while.
I would not call myself a degenerate gambler, definitely not a degenerate, but I do have a bit of a gambling problem. Love to mix those two worlds, and I'm extremely competitive. So like, if I could mix those two worlds together and make like a little bit of money playing video games, like that'd be pretty badass.
Am I fortunate that I never caught the gambling bug? It's like really never been like appeased me at all.
I mean, you got a little bit of it in you because you're a hodler. So, like, I feel like if you're in Bitcoin, you're a bit of a gambler to begin with.
That's true. But sports betting, I'm like, I don't know. I made one sports bet in my life, junior year in high school. $10, the Eagles would cover against the Patriots.
Really? That's it? That's the only time you've ever...
Won it.
Did they cover?
Yeah, they covered. Good. I won.
I like it. You just went out on top. You're like, 100%, baby. Yeah, I mean, I stopped sports betting. Sports betting was one of the reasons one of the ways that I realized immediately like the purpose of Bitcoin, because they tried to block all of our, like I had money stuck on an account.
I mean, this is a good history lesson of Bitcoin. That was probably like a lot.
I still have that money stuck on that account. I don't think they never like allowed Bitcoin withdrawals, but I was like, but if they did,
that's well known in the online gambling world. What did they call it, Black Friday or something, where everybody got. Cross the board band.
But yeah, they went with the payment processors was the way they stopped them.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't actually go for the sites.
Yeah. No, but staying on Lightning, another Lightning sort of news item this week, our boy Grubles, not at not Grubles, G-R-U-B-L-E-S, on Twitter, share, I guess he's running, he works for Blockstream, very involved with their satellite API and sort of expanding the satellite API, and he was scanning sort of the record.
Receiving.
Yeah, he was receiving messages from the satellite, and he noticed that somebody, we don't know, we can't confirm this, but somebody claiming to be an individual from a post-Soviet state keeping a journal using the Lightning Network and the Blockstream satellite API to send basically completely anonymous messages that nobody could trace, and sort of, I described it, I wrote about it in the newsletter as well, and described it as somebody exploring the edge of a cypherpunk future that the rest of humanity doesn't even know exists yet. Do you have any comments, Matt?
I just poured myself some more scotch. First of all, I love... Grubles is awesome. And I love his display name because he makes you have to say Grubles, who's at not Grubles on Twitter. But yeah, so this message was... I mean, it was just like badass to read, right? It got you like all pumped up. Like, this is why we do it.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was like a message in a bottle type.
Exactly.
Type deal through a satellite to where Grubles is located. I'm not going to like dock. Like, I don't know exactly where he's located, but from my observational skills, somewhere in America. So like, that's pretty badass. And like that went out to everyone who's receiving data. You could just, all the data is just coming down from the Blockstream satellites. So if you just, if you're set up for receiving, you're getting a stream of data and these messages.
Yeah, if you're able to see the radio waves, correct? Coming from the satellite?
Yes.
I think. If you're able to receive the radio waves, and if they hit your area of the world, you can receive these messages, which are encrypted. You don't know where they came from, which is, it may not seem that.
Well, you might be able to like put two and two with the Lightning payment or something. I'm not positive.
Yeah, you might be. There. Yeah.
There's some, you know, I wouldn't say complete. You can do it anonymously.
Yes. It would take some effort. You can do it anonymously.
I think so, yeah. I haven't actually played around with it. I really want to. That'd be really badass.
But for you freaks who sort of can't grasp the gravity of this, I would say, like, so somebody in China who lives under the great firewall of China in particular, from internet service provider perspective, like an area where they're not allowed to search about the Tiananmen Square massacre or something like that. And if they were to, they'd number one, be arrested, and number two, wouldn't find anything. Somebody could relay information about this via the Blockstream satellite sending messages via Lightning.
And so the key here is, like, we already had satellites that could send things, mm-hmm. right? The key here is that anyone now can broadcast to the satellite network and transmit whatever they want for a microtransaction with Lightning Network.
Yeah.
Right? That's the key, is that there's an API here where they can send the goods, and they can pay for it with an uncensorable, censorship resistant network.
I found myself in a like a philosophical quandary. Because I described the use of this Lightning Network and satellite API sort of use case as free speech. But is it really free speech if you have to pay a microtransaction? Like, this is just like some high thought I had.
I mean, I think free speech can have a cost, right?
Yeah.
Free speech always has a cost.
As a fraction of a penny negligible to be considered free speech. This is like something.
Yeah, I guess it's not truly free.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's free speech enabling technology, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's, I guess, would be the proper term. That's a pretty funny rabbit hole, though.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is this Blockstream. Well, first of all, I'm pretty sure this is Testnet, so he actually paid nothing.
Yeah, it was Testnet, yeah.
Yeah, so he actually paid nothing,
like,
to do it.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is Blockstream, free of charge, also sends down Bitcoin blocks. So you can run a fully validating node without an internet connection.
Yeah, and I think it might have been Grubles, too, who was showing data of the speed of transmission with the satellite, and it's actually faster than internet in some cases.
Well, yeah, it matters how fast your internet is.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
But, and it's a nice little redundant thing. Like, we were talking about, like, the potential of, like, Eclipse attacks with the ETC blockchain. like, did Coinbase's nodes get surrounded, basically, and getting fed bad information, which wasn't the case, it turned out. But, like, if you also are connected to the satellite, you can confirm that you're getting the same block. Because the problem is, if you're only getting the blocks from the satellite, like, you're trusting, Blockstream to be sending the right stuff. The idea is they hope that other companies will do similar things, so you can have your satellite hooked up to, like, four different feeds coming in.
Yeah.
And then you're trusting that they're not all colluding.
Yeah. No, and people are like, oh, Blockstream, Bilderberg X, centralization. It's like, somebody's got to prove the use case. We've said this before. And I'm happy that they're proving this use case. Holy shit, there's some, like, who knows? The post-Soviet guy sending journal messages every day could be a psyop.
I just, but, like, I mean, it could be advertising.
Even
like,
it could exactly. Have been, even if it's advertising.
It could have been Rubles who did it.
Right?
You know? I thought it was funny because when we talked about this the first time on RHR, I was like, yeah, you could have, like, weather sensors, like, in the Antarctic that are paying to send the information back. Like, that was my first thought or whatever. And, like, this, like, live journal thing kind of is really cool.
Right?
It's like,
it's
so
like a post-secret
simple.
Or a Yik Yak, but, like, on a global scale.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, and people shit on Lightning, but it seems like the growth and the innovation, the speed of innovation is just accelerating. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's just really, especially with jet lag, it's really hard to keep up with it all.
What's jet lag feel like? How would you describe it if you had to, like, say it in, like, a few sentences?
Well, like, I was talking about it yesterday. When you try and sleep, you're, like, exhausted, but you can't sleep because your body's, like, all fucked up. And it kind of felt like if you lay in bed on shrooms. Like, you're just, like, the second you laid down, your mind raced even more. Like, and then you got up, and then you're, like, kind of exhausted. But then you lay back down, and you just can't fucking fall asleep. And, like, my appetite is all fucked up.
That sucks.
I get, like, hungry at, like, the weirdest times of day.
Do you,
like,
think
massively hungry.
Do you think you'll recover soon?
Yeah, I think the scotch is helping. This is my first drink since I got back.
Well, I'm glad to be sharing it with you.
Yeah. Likewise, Marty. Likewise.
Next topic. We don't know if this is true. We weren't able to confirm this. The Block wrote about it. Regardless if it's true or not, I think it's a good topic to bring up just so you freaks out there know the vulnerabilities that exist out there. This is particular story is about exchanges that were hacked. They basically... Bittrex, I believe Binance was on the list. Again, can't confirm this, but the story goes somebody hacked their servers, got access to personal information of the users of those exchanges, including passport information, social security numbers, other personal information, and somebody is selling it on the dark market, like in mass, for like $10 a pop. Again, can't confirm, but this... It is important to know that this vulnerability does exist. If you are sharing your passport information, your social security information with these exchanges, just know that they are honeypots of information that are huge targets for hackers.
Counterpoint, like, so is the U.S. government.
Right?
Like, there, but didn't, like, the IRS lose a ton of stuff?
Equifax, which is a third party.
Right. Equifax said every, but I think the IRS also lost a bunch, like, a couple of years later. But yeah, Equifax is even worse. I forgot about that. They already have my social security number and every single other social security number because they all got dumped.
But what if they want to know people that own crypto specifically?
No, I know. I agree. I mean, KYC is a security hole, right? First of all, this is completely unconfirmed. We were, like, trying to confirm it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure this is all based on a CryptoCoin news report. And they're, like, a horrible, horrible website. Like, really, no one should ever go there or ever use it as... But it got picked up by some other people as well, and they started talking about it. But I'm pretty sure it all just comes back to this one report. Like, really, no one should ever use that website. It's just a really, really...
Yeah.
Horrible Spammy. Source of information.
Yeah. But
that being said, this is a good learning time to make a learning point, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That, like, KYC is a security hole. It does more harm than it's good. As these leaks happen, it's less effective because they'll just open up accounts with bought credentials. So it's not even like you know, I the most recent hack, I said something like, "Oh right, the ETC from the most recent reorg went through Binance," and I mentioned on, I was like, that we should be able to find out who the person is if they really want to by just finding out from Binance, because Binance has a withdrawal limit if you're not KYC'd. And someone pointed out, which they made a good point, that they could just be using a hacked account or fake KYC credentials. And then you're just looking at a victim. Then they just washed it through a victim's account.
And that would make more sense. It's crazy.
So it's not even effective. It's not even that effective. And it just puts us all at risk. And I don't trust these companies to actually protect our stuff.
No, neither do I. And can you blame them either? That's such a burden to put on these companies, number one.
Well, this wasn't, they didn't even, they offloaded the burden. If the alleged report is correct, it was like the third party KYC processing company that got hacked.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't even the, that's what the CCN report says. It says that they like outsourced their KYC to a third party because they were like, this is too much of a burden. And then that company got fucked.
And this is pervasive, dude. Like, this is a big problem. Like, how do you, like, is this solvable?
Well, this is what, you know, Bitcoin gives us that other path, right?
Yeah.
But you need to get into the system in the first place.
Yeah.
But, like, once, like, in a post-Bitcoin world, KYC is unenforceable.
Yeah.
And you just got to seed the system first.
Exactly, but...
And, like, you can't enforce KYC on mining. That's one of the beauties of mining, right? You can, in a POS system, you can enforce KYC system-wide.
Listen, you're...
In a POW world, you can't.
You're talking to somebody who completely agrees with you, but I do think there is a PR battle that we face. Like, people think that KYC is for the good. Like, they're, again, like, Chris Dan in the episode of Tales from the Crypt interview that I dropped yesterday... That was a lot of that episode was talked about, like, media framing and framing of conversations and debates in particular. And the KYC debate is framed in such a way that people want the safety of AML KYC because of, they're worried about drug dealers and criminals and terrorists laundering money. And what we've come to find is that these people launder money through the banks anyway. Like, who just, Deutsche Bank just got fined.
And Cash doesn't have KYC.
Cash App?
No, like the actual green dollar bill.
Yeah, obviously.
But like they're trying to get rid of Cash, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look at like the Patriot Act. Like there's a whole, especially if you have like some kind of major event or catastrophe, you can always frame these things to push them through. Like governments tend to become more dominant over time, like of their people over time, and take more rights away, and then all this technology enables them to do it, right? There's a huge surveillance world. Like when I was on the podcast with Pete, he said to me, Matt, do you ever worry, like he brought up
sorry about Pete McCormick,
yeah, he brought up a quote that was, I forget who said it.
Tim May said it.
Mm-hmm. That if we go down the wrong path, we end up in like a horrible, horrible result.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really that result is inevitable without Bitcoin regardless. So even though it is true that if we go down the wrong path here with Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general, we could end up with a way more surveilled society financially. But I think without Bitcoin, you end up in that situation regardless. Like, yeah, that's the direction we're going in.
No, this is actually a great segue into the next topic, which is Taproot. Aaron Van Weerdum from Bitcoin Magazine. Shout out, Aaron. Shout out, Bitcoin Magazine. Always putting out high-quality content. Aaron, in particular, is very astute at breaking down very complex topics in regards to Bitcoin protocol development. And his latest piece, he broke down Taproot, Mass, Schnorr, and Pay2 script hash signatures. And we highly recommend that you check it out. And it relates to what Matt was just talking about, because it would make Bitcoin a lot more fungible at the protocol level and sort of fuck up a lot of the tracking abilities that could potentially lead to a dystopian future in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it'd be a pretty huge upgrade. We need as much privacy as possible with these systems.
Yeah.
Aaron's fucking awesome. Everyone should definitely read this post.
Yeah, and I'm not even going to try to, like, explain what Aaron, like, the depth of the article and explain what Mast and Schnorr and Taproot are, but it is crazy, like, the depth to which these Bitcoin developers go to figure out ways to make this stuff work. Like, it is an intricate process, Taproot, or an intricate sort of scheme. Taproot is that you, like Greg Maxwell, found ingenious ways to sort of combine a bunch of things to make Bitcoin scripting language better, number one, and then more fungible and more efficient. So definitely go check out that article, learn about the potential upgrades that can be coming, and know that, like, this is just one proposal of many. So that's actually probably what we should talk about, is the packaging of these upgrades. So this is just one way to do it. The main drive of which is to get Schnorr implemented, I would argue.
Right, that's like at the base level as a soft fork.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, all these improvements are designed to make Bitcoin more private and more efficient. Those are the two key cornerstones. And to do it in as conservative a way as possible. Like, Schnorr has been tested now pretty heavily.
Decades.
And, you know, that's really, that's what it's about. So everyone should definitely give this this post a read, and they should follow Aaron because he's one of the best in the space.
He really is. Shout out to Bitcoin Magazine, too. Big fan of them. Always putting out quality content, and they're back on a Bitcoin focus, which I'm a big fan of. You put this on the list, Georgia and Bitfury. This was a big rumbling on Twitter today.
This is pretty cool. Nick brought this to our attention, Nick Carter.
Yeah. So it looks like Georgia, I tweeted it out, Alia Yakta S, the die have been cast. It looks like they might be the first nation state to sort of subsidize Bitcoin mining in particular.
Or at least
from a tax perspective. Yes.
Like, known.
Yes.
Because, like, Venezuela is straight up mining themselves. Like, 99% sure. They've never officially admitted it. Yeah, but, like, they're definitely doing that.
Let me pull the quote up here.
So, Georgia, the country, not the state, is, they have really cheap electric energy costs, and they've been subsidizing Bitfury with no taxes. Like, just basically no taxes, cheap-ass land, right? What does your quote say?
Said, as soon as Bitfury opened its doors, Georgia created free economic zones where mining activities and electricity weren't taxed. When Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies were exchanged for dollars or pounds, Georgia treated the exchange as an export exempt from value-added taxes so Bitfury could keep every penny of earnings.
And there was, like, an investment there. Technically, it wasn't an investment. It was a loan of $10 million by one of, like, the higher-ups in the government to Bitfury in the beginning. So there's, like, even though there's no official taxes, there's probably different pay schemes that are involved to enrich certain people here, right? So, like, let's not pretend that Bitfury is getting away scot-free. Like, I was having this conversation on Twitter, and people were trying to take the negative angle with this. And I think long-term, it's a bad assumption to make that there's no taxes. Of course, there's going to be
hidden taxes
and low taxes, right? But they'll just be at a competitive rate. They're located on land, like in your country. You know, you have the army there and whatnot. So there's it's a protection racket to a bit, but you got to pay something, right? And so countries that want to foster this now are going to give even better breaks now, right? And then they'll raise a little bit in the future.
Yeah.
And it gives them, if this becomes what we think it'll become, Bitcoin, it's a strategic reserve, right? It's like having major gold mines in your country or major oil reserves in your country, having this kind of facility set up. They do R&D and everything.
Yeah, and getting in this early so you can, the block reward subsidy is still considerably high compared to what it will be a few decades from now.
In like 5 years, we're going to be like, it was huge.
It was huge. It was huge. I was telling you, you guys don't even know. The block reward was huge back in the day. I remember when it was 25 Bitcoin.
Back in my day.
Yeah, so keep an eye on that. And Nick, actually, in this thread, we'll link to Nick's thread. But he made a prediction a year ago in April 12th, 2018, probably less than 12 months until nation state announces a special crypto economic zone. Basically called it out word for word. Georgia announced that, so shout out Nick. Very good prediction. Came true. We'll see who's next. I wonder who it will be.
I mean, you got to play ball, otherwise you start to fall behind.
The only winning move is to play.
I really hope America doesn't misstep here.
Let's not fuck this up, America. I have faith. I have faith we won't. This is probably not going to be you guys probably aren't going to like that I just said I have faith and then I'm saying this topic. The ETF was denied again, officially.
No, it wasn't actually.
It was pulled off the table. CBOE pulled it off the table.
Yeah, VanEck, CBOE pulled it off.
Yeah.
Which means they knew it was going to get denied. Yeah. Otherwise, you don't pull it off. There's like, right? Like, you have 15% chance. They already knew it was a long shot. If you have, like, a decent chance of going, you're going to still just risk it.
Did the shutdown play into it?
That's what they said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the shutdown officially over? Is this true?
No, it's not.
I thought they announced this afternoon. I think.
Really?
I think you might have missed it, yeah. At least temporary. I don't know what the fuck's going
There's
on.
There's no way. There's no way. If I was a betting man, I would have bet on it.
I think it's open at least temporarily. I could be wrong.
Well, did you see the news about the IRS? Like 15,000 people or something ridiculous didn't show up?
Yeah, apparently the IRS
is striking. They can't go on strike, so they're all sick or something.
Yeah, they're all on sick leave. I think that's the FAA had that problem too today.
Yeah. But anyway, what were you talking about here? We were talking, the ETF. No, not the ETF. Yeah, we were talking about the ETF.
Yes, we were.
And BACT also got delayed, but we talked about that last week. Yeah. That wasn't recent.
Don't hold your breath, freaks. This shit's been coming for five years.
Yeah, the ETF is, this was like, it was still a long shot, but it was our best shot. This was the one, they intentionally made it like super expensive. You had to pay like $250K a share or something like that to keep out like the normal retail. Everything was based on OTC prices. They set up a whole OTC index for it and everything.
Yeah.
So they tried to go above and beyond. So this was like our best shot. But you know, it'll come when it comes. Anyone who wants access to Bitcoin can get access to it right now.
Right.
You know, even if you want like a full custodial, like ETF style option, like you have Robinhood, you can just do Robinhood.
No, and again, to sort of highlight the signal against the noise, like the ETF, yeah, it would be great, but really look for the developments around Lightning, like the use cases being enabled there, Georgia setting up these economic zones is probably better narratives and stories to focus on, because I think they'll have a larger overall impact in the long run.
I just think this is like kind of significant one, because if I remember correctly, like the ETF narrative was really like that trigger in with like late 2016, early 2017. We had like two big ones. I think it was like the Winklevoss was one of them. Mm-hmm. And they got like, we like pumped up to the announcement and then they got denied and then we dropped a little bit and then we pumped again. Bitcoin was primed to pump anyway with like halvening and restriction of supply and whatnot. But that narrative was like a major narrative that led into that whole 2017
mess. Oh, totally. But I think the narrative of people actually using Bitcoin via microtransactions to accumulate Satoshis like in gaming is such a sexier like road to adoption than ETFs just buying a bunch of supply and holding it. Both will probably happen, but that's just my two Satoshis.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like very 2013-esque.
Yeah. What else was I going to bring up? I just had something in my mind here. Oh, what I wrote about in the Bent today. Adam Back basically gave a history of all the iterations of digital cash that came before Bitcoin and why they failed, and basically explained that the inability to control the supply inflation without a central authority sort of plagued the digital currency, digital cash space until Satoshi came up with Bitcoin based on proof of work with a difficulty adjustment, with the difficulty adjustment being probably the crux and the most important part of the incentive system. So definitely check that out if you haven't read the bent yet today. The difficulty adjustment is a very unheralded, beautiful feat of human ingenuity, I would argue.
He used the words inflation control.
Yes.
Was the big innovation. Yeah. No, it was a nice little trail down history.
Yeah. Trail down Adam Back's memory lane.
That history is super fascinating, and like everyone should read like as much as possible about everything that led up to it.
Especially if you fall prey to the narrative that like Bitcoin is the MySpace of digital currencies and stuff. Like, the stuff has been worked on for decades now at this point.
It was a long time coming.
Yeah. Very long time coming. No, so I thought that thread was pretty cool. Wrote about it today. A lot of exciting thing happened. Like I said, we talked in the beginning of the episode, price is dead. It's been in this range bound sort of situation for the last few weeks at least. Things are very boring right now. Things are very quiet. Crypto Twitter. Let's talk about crypto Twitter a little bit. It's been very, very volatile.
Truly bear market.
Yeah, right?
You know,
people snapping at each other, man.
I was like, this whole time I was like, it's not that bad. It's going to have to get worse. It's going to have to get worse. Like engagement seems like pretty good. Everyone seems pretty friendly-ish. And then it just like really took a dive. Like I expected it to get worse. And then finally when I was like, wow, maybe it won't actually get worse. Maybe like we're adding more new people still, even though it's a bear market because it's like a bigger pool, like a different stage. And then it just recently tanked. It just fucking got bad.
Yeah,
and
man.
Like people are losing it. They're like, there's rage quit watch going on.
A lot of bored people out there, I would argue. Like, and I'm guilty of this too. If you don't, I contribute to it every once in a while.
Twitter's incentives are designed to troll people, so you can't.
Yeah.
You know, but then you're losing money. Everything's going to shit. It's kind of boring. Like, you're losing money with, like, low volatility. So you're not even, like, all the traders are bored. You can't go up or down. So you're, like, trying to do, like, the high leverage. It's just, you know, just take a step away from the computer. Take a step away from the phone.
Take a walk.
Uninstall the Twitter app from your phone. And, you know, just, like, remember why we're all here. Or, like, why most of us are here, I hope.
Yeah, and it can be boring for a while.
You got to have the long-term view with this shit. Exactly. All this shit is just straight-up gambling, except for the long-term Bitcoin hold. The long-time Bitcoin hold, I'll just be, like, insanely bullish about all the fucking time. And, like, people can think I'm crazy about that, but I think that's just, like, the best risk-reward ratio that, like, people will ever see in their lifetime. But everything else is just straight-up degenerate gambling.
Yeah, I would agree. Bitcoin is getting us back to a sense of reality in this world, objective truth, which I would argue the human race is becoming more disconnected from truth in the modern age.
I think that's like I don't like that meme.
I like it.
I think we have more access to truth than we ever had before, right? And we have more access to all the horrible shit that we didn't, you know, like, and propaganda stuff.
I agree. But to understand that, I would argue you need to be able to critically think. And I don't think a lot of people are thinking too critically in this day and age.
Look at this podcast. This podcast, we can hit like, it's podcasts people don't think about are a very open platform. We can hit all these different apps on all these different devices. People around the world can listen to us just fucking shoot the shit, drink some scotch on a Friday, and talk about all this real shit. And that was never possible before.
I agree. Right? I agree. I would just think this is not as popular. I think it's getting better. I would argue that. But I think a vast majority of people are still stuck in anachronistic ways, I would argue.
Okay. I can agree with that.
I'm optimistic. I'm overall optimistic. It's just that it'll light a fire under your asses out there. You guys that are, you freaks that are listening are thinking critically, obviously. So that's the last topic that I had to talk about. Is there anything else you want to riff off? What else happened this week?
I don't know. Do we want to?
You look tired, bro.
I'm so tired.
You look like you're about to pass out.
I'm just happy to be in front of you, be back, you know, be back here making the groove go.
Yeah. I'm making these Friday apps too. They're fun. Any cultural lessons from Hong Kong you want to imbue on the crowd? What was your favorite part?
So they're doing massive reclamation.
What do you mean?
Out there, like land reclamation, where they just basically, you know, they just wall off a portion of the water, and then they dredge all the water out, and then they, I don't know if dredge is the right term, and then they just fill it back up. And then they, so people who had waterfront property 20 years ago are like 150 feet from the water.
Holy
like
shit.
I went to the hotel my grandmother got married at. It's called the Peninsula Hotel. It's in Kowloon. It's not on Hong Kong Island. And right in front of it, there's this huge balcony area, and that's where she got married. And right in front of it, there's just like a massive 6-lane highway. And I was like, you know, what's going on here? She's like, Matt, like when we got married here, like it was on the water. The water was right in front of this balcony. And it was called the Peninsula Hotel because it was on a peninsula. And now it's like 250 feet from the water. It's pretty crazy.
So they're manufacturing land. Interesting.
But it's not so scarce, right?
No. Very interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that was... But they're running out of... If they want the harbor to still be there, they can't like reclaim that much more.
Right.
But like we did massive here too. Like I don't know if you ever saw like the Boston maps. Like, it's sitting on, like, all where there used to be water. It's, like, pretty crazy. Like, all the really built-up parts are all...
Interesting.
And, like, Battery Park in New York is all reclaimed.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I've never thought that.
But it's, like, extra massive in Hong Kong and extra recent, which was pretty crazy.
Are you going to let us know when we can access the documentary?
I don't know. Yes, I guess. I guess someone's going to probably dox it anyway.
Oh. Never mind.
We'll see.
We won't chase it down.
We'll see. They don't know how long it's going to take them to come out with it. I said to them as I was leaving, I was like, I'm really looking forward to seeing the documentary. And they like chuckled, you know, like it wasn't coming for a really long time and they were hoping it was actually going to happen. So we'll see.
Well, I hope you had fun. It's glad to have you back. Face-to-face is much preferred to a signal call while recording locally.
Yeah, I think in hindsight, Signal was probably the worst idea because I think they blocked that extra amounts or something. I don't know. Yeah. But whatever. It worked out.
Wouldn't surprise me.
It came out pretty good. I listened to it. It wasn't that bad. I'm glad we recorded. That was my first time recording locally. I bought a mic for you guys, and I recorded it locally, and I didn't fuck it up. There was like a pretty high chance that like I didn't record that I didn't record like any of it. The whole thing just wasn't recorded after it was all said and done. Right? Like that was like a 15% chance, something like that.
Yeah. We would have just posted the one-sided
just you talking to yourself?
Just me talking to myself. That would have been funny.
That would have been a classic.
What was Matt saying? I don't know.
We'll never know.
What was he saying,
the lost
dude?
Tapes.
Can you hear me, dude? Yeah. That's all we got for this week, freaks. Shout out to our sponsor, Honeyminer. Go to honeyminer.com/labs. You Linux users, they're looking out for you. That's all I got this week, freaks. Matt.
Tell Murad you're excited for his episode next week.
Murad, can't wait for next week, bro. We're going to enjoy some steak and talk Bitcoin. Always exciting.
Cheers, guys.
Peace and love.